Good morning, everyone. It's a blessing to be able to worship God with you all. If you're new here, I'm the youth guy. I work with the kids, so this isn't my full-time gig, but you're stuck with me today. And as such, you're privy to however I feel like or wherever I feel like going. So I'm going to use my position for two purposes. The first one is this. Just to let you know a little bit about next week, I'm meeting with all the youth group families, and anyone who wants to volunteer or learn a little bit about the youth group, we're going to meet for lunch, we're going to have a quick meeting, hope you can be a part of it. Please join us, and if you are able to go, send me a text, or in the back on the youth group, desk back there, you can do a sign-up sheet, that would be awesome. The other thing I'm going to do is since I'm not the full-time guy here, and I don't have to do this twice a week every single week, whenever I get to speak, I kind of have the luxury of like just using this moment to kind of be a reflective tool. Something I'm studying, something I'm struggling with, something I'm kind of just dwelling or musing upon. Kind of my journal entry, if you will. And you guys are, again, sort of stuck in experiencing that with me. But I wanted to share, I've been really challenged in my life as a younger man or in my younger years. I was challenged by two different spiritual leaders in my life who've given me two prompts that I feel like are really big challenge for me. I feel like I fail in, feel like I could grow in and work on. And the first one is this. I'll give you the quotation, at least the best of my memory. The heart of it, regardless, is kind of behind it. But here's the challenging one. What would we choose to do if we knew we would never fail? If you knew you would never fail at a project, at an assignment, at a task, at a goal, what would you choose to do? And the prompt has always been like being kingdom-driven, kingdom-minded, right? Like this individual is one of the great missionaries I've come to know in my life, and he took that to task in his own. He says that's his like springboard. That's his thesis for life, man. His goal is to get the church planted in every single, country. And, maybe a far cry, but he's done a good job. And so I just think that's noble. I've seen how in my own dreams, especially in my selfless dreams for God, I've dreamed a little smaller than I should. And so I've always been challenged by that. We're not going to really talk about that today. I just wanted you to think about it. The other one is this one, and I'm paraphrasing here whenever I've been challenged by an individual I look up to. Think of what we could do if no one needed the credit for what they did. I thought that was a really good charge. And again, I bring this one up because this one gets very specific, almost targeted and offensive for some areas in my life I don't think I'm particularly great at, which is allowing others to get the credit, or rather, more importantly, to not put a spotlight on me when I do what's required of me. I think I've kind of struggled with that. It's been a vice in my life I haven't always done particularly well. This isn't a unique quote to this individual. He shared it from Harry S. Truman, who said it this way. It is amazing what you can accomplish if you do not care who gets the credit. That's awesome. One of our own presidents, big dude, was an advocate for this and charged the nation with this kind of philosophy. So pretty cool. That's worth sharing. Maybe something for you to dwell on, to think of, or perhaps like me to slightly squirm because you realize that you do sometimes like the credit. You do sometimes like to get noticed. And it's a challenge to live out this ideology. And I want to catch you up to speed real quick what we're talking about this morning. If you were here last week, we talked about thieves in our life, specifically a thief of jealousy. We always, we accredit jealousy as the thief of joy, meaning it robs us of our happiness, but we're only there looking at others and drooling and wishing we could have what we don't have. And that's true, but it's a little bit more sinister than that, perhaps. The thief is someone who thieves or steals from us productivity and steals from us our own contentment in God. And so we attributed jealousy or greed or covetousness to a thief. Today we're going to talk about this citizen, perhaps this citizen of sorts, who kind of, lack of a better term, oops, I turned it off. Sorry, David. Who perhaps lives by this creed, they're going to live in a way that's very humbly and mellowly is like, man, I'm going to do what's required of me, and I'm not going to get the credit for it, but that's okay. And it's very this utopic sort of experience, which is like, it's not really about me, but it's about the whole. That's nice. That's cool. But to be a citizen is kind of a thankless role. Well, I thought about this. I like movies, and I've shared this a lot, but there's a movie called Megamind. And I don't know the character's name, but there's like a superhero, Superman figure, if you will, and they're all praising him. They're like, there he is. We'll say it's Superman. It's not Superman. Like, there's Superman. We love you, Superman. And the character Superman looks over to the crowd and says, and I love you, random citizen. They just go on. And you never really know, like, who's the person? Who's the guy? So some thankless face in a crowd that you'll always forget. Sometimes hard to live out this citizen mentality that's just one with the crew. Dare we say this? Dare we speak it? Are we, if we have this philosophy, it doesn't matter who gets the credit, it doesn't matter who gets notice, that just the job's getting done. Are we at risk of not getting anything done? Like, will people still do what's required of them if they don't get some sort of like, I don't know, some sort of like affection, some sort of acknowledgement, some sort of reward? Like, will my pride allow me to just sit there and be like, sure, I'm going to do what's required? Or is it just easy then as a nation, as a community, as a city, as a congregation or a family to become dispassionate with what I do if I live out this environment? Essentially, am I just cutting the legs off of productivity? And again, we hate to think of jealousy or greed or even pride and recognition as this, like, I don't know. We know it's not good. We know it's not healthy. But is it just like a vice we tolerate because it actually gets stuff done? Because really, we are prompted towards working and production whenever we get noticed, whenever we get thanked, whenever we get paid, whenever we get something. How do we live out this world? And is it possible to live in a world where we just sit there and say, let's cut out all passion, all reward, and let's just all get along? Is it sustainable? That's a genuinely good question. Maybe we have some philosophers in the crowd who could be better authorities on the subject. But I want us to take a moment to talk about jealousy, because we've talked about jealousy in the past and a little bit today. And I want us to look at it. Brother David Dudley has shared with me, he's got a good word study on greed, covetousness, and jealousy, and I would urge you to go talk to him about that. But for today, we're just going to acknowledge the word jealousy for a moment. It's the word zelos. In one of our passages last week, we read this, James chapter 3, verse 16. It says, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. And if you look to a few verses earlier, it says, all demonic and evil and self-interested wisdom comes from this philosophy to be there for self-ambition and jealousy. So jealousy, this word zelos, is often a very negative term. Like, it's not particularly good for the most part. You know, it can be translated as jealous, as envy, but also malice. And so it's kind of like, it's a lot of like, I don't know, it's a fiery term. It's a aggressive, highly emotional sensation, feeling, characteristic. I don't know how you label it, but like there's just a lot with it. And it's a big emotional response to feel jealousy. Now, I don't think it would take very long, especially if you've grown up in the church at all, to understand that there is some good parts of jealousy, is there not? In the same book, James chapter 4, says that God is a jealous God. So jealousy has a place here, and that's worth investigating, but we're not really discussing that today. I just want us to think about this word zelos, because you can kind of get another term we get from this. Because while there's a lot of negative and maybe primarily negative interpretations, we also get some noble ones. Mr. Henry read this passage for us, and it was Romans 12, 10 through 11. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal, zelos. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. So the word, yes, I'm going to try to paint this picture. If it's kind of like that dangerous weapon that can be more often than not used for negative reasons, for corruption, for failure, for damage. But it's not inherently bad. In fact, it has a place because it can mean a lot of different things. Let me catch up with my notes here. It has a lot of big emotions, but it can mean zeal, passion, earnestness, and active enthusiasm. It's all about this big, fiery sensation of passion. And so the major question for us today is this. Where is your passion? What do you get your passion from? And maybe this will help us figure out this thief to citizen mentality. There is a need for passion that motivates. There is a need for energy that pushes, and frankly, there is a need for zeal, zelos, that creates movement and effectiveness in our world. We were not meant to be these dispassionate organisms, part of a machine. We were meant to have passion and zeal in our world, but it's how do I hone that in the right and accurate and frankly effective way in the Spirit of God that wishes for God and His will and His glory to be the motivating, propulsive factor in my life. How can we do that? I don't think our answer today is like going to figure out all of jealousy, but I just want to look at it from one perspective of jealousy is a dangerous tool. The passion within it is often, much like anger, is very dangerous, but it has an active place in our world, and it is God created and frankly characterized of God for a specific reason. So here are three passages that will help our zelos, to use it optimally. So we're going to look at three passages. Much like last week, I want us to go over to Matthew chapter 6, because what I think we can do today as we go, this is a challenging, difficult, thorny subject. Again, how to use a dangerous emotion in an effective way, and yet it is one that is communicated about in Scripture. So how can we, if nothing else, learn some good principles as we leave today using our zealousness, our zeal for God's glory? And I think you'll know most of these passages, but let's start off in Matthew chapter 6. Here's going to be our thought today. Point number one, challenge number one, start by doing what you can, no matter where you are, just do what you can, and choose to undermine the human hunger to be recognized or rewarded for it. Easier said than done, a really challenging task. I would say maybe the most challenging blanket statement I'm going to say this morning, but this is really important for what it means to go forward, to use our zeal and our energy and our passion for God's glory. It's to do what you can and choose to undermine the human hunger to be recognized for it. Let's read this passage, Matthew chapter 6. Beware of practicing your righteousness, meaning practicing doing good according to God's will. Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And again, this is a challenging one, I think, especially as social media, phones become popular. Like, it's just, you see everyone advocating their good, because you want good to be advocated. You want good to be noticed. Who doesn't? But it's all about what kind of reward are you going to choose? Are you going to settle for the lesser reward versus the greater reward? Typically, settling for lesser rewards isn't bad. It's good incentive in your life. In my life, there's been times where I've had a big goal or a big task ahead, and it's always been good and healthy for me to have small little incentives throughout the day, small little rewards. I remember being in college. It was like, man, you cannot watch your favorite TV show, The Office, until you get your homework done. And like, it was really good. And then all of a sudden, I'd be like, ah, I'm bored. I'm going to watch the episode anyways. And then all of a sudden, I started seeing my effectiveness, my productivity go down. It's good to have these little rewards. It's good to be like smart and like efficient and be like, hey, I just need these little boosts throughout life. Sometimes I need a candy bar to get to 2 p.m. That's not a bad thing. But here's the thing. This is more than just like small rewards. This is about what am I choosing to settle for? He uses the idea of like a left hand looking at a right hand and saying, you're a good hand. It's like, thanks, I'm a good hand. Who cares? They're just hands. Let's memorialize it with applause. Like applause, everyone likes applause. Everyone kind of wants applause. But what is it? It's good to applaud people. It's good and healthy for us to be people who see the work of others, to see the practice of others, to herald it, to praise it. It's a good practice. But put it into a bit of perspective. It's just one hand telling another hand you're a good hand. And that's fine, that's dandy, but what does it do at the end of the day? It's small, it's simple, it goes by really fast. Dare I say it means nothing. Maybe it boosts productivity a little bit more for a moment, but it's not a whole lot. He says, you've been built for something so much more, a much grander reward in mind. Your heart desires something much more sustainable than one hand telling another hand that's just like it that you've done a good job of being a hand. He's like, this is much grander. Your spirit craves for your Heavenly Father who created you to praise you, to notice you, to see you, and to call you his child. That is something worth living for. So undermine this great natural human desire within you to be noticed. And I think if nothing else, this is just a good practice to sometimes do good anonymously. We're not always great at it, but it's good practice to do good anonymously where you can. And I think that that would help be a good grounding force to where we begin. The next passage I'm going to put up here, we'll put it on the board because we're going to jump to two different passages. It tells very similar stories, but Ecclesiastes 9 and then Colossians 3, I think what would be helpful for us as we learn to fine-tune our zeal and our passion in the right way, in the way our God expects for us, is to learn to find satisfaction and passion for where you are and in what you do. So that comes from God. You know these passages. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10 says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Do it heartily, as our next passage will say. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. And Ecclesiastes is a proverb. It's wisdom literature. It's something that's good philosophy. And the philosophy is that, you know, Solomon, or whoever the author was like, man, it is just, life is passing. Everything ends up like, you know, going away. So, but it's still good to work with what you got, to work with who you are, to work with the characteristics and the ability that you've been given. But Paul takes it a step further when he says, wherever you do, or whatever you do, work heartily, with a lot of gumption, a lot of pride. Work heartily as for the Lord and not for man, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward, you are serving the Lord Christ. And I think that this is big and important to understand. It's like we can't be up here saying, like, let's minimize the passion or the pride within you to be a responsible person, to work with pride and dignity on the responsibilities given to you with the capabilities you have been granted. And as long as it glorifies God with the work that you have, like, we shouldn't thwart or undermine that fire, that passion within you. It is God-given. It is God-ordained. It is good to work. It is easy to complain about work. And there might be a place for that on occasion. And again, if it doesn't glorify God, that's a different story. But we should look at work through the lens that God has given it to us, which is it is good for us, it is healthy for us, it is benefiting our character, and it is something we have been given to do for our days here. Let us look at work in the way that it is, but let us still look at it with the pride and the responsibility that we should, which it is meant to give us pride in our God who created us with the capabilities and the places and the circumstances we have. Because others might be looking, granted, like, I get it, like, others might be looking, peer reviews, man, your other friends or family, CEOs or bosses, critics even, people who are nagging you on, like, those people exist and they might be watching. But man, what Paul really charges you and I to do is to understand this, that those people might be there, but you are working with the blessing, with the glory, and with the approval of your God in mind. If you can do that, if you can undermine this great human sensation to seek approval for what you do, and then to just see the eyes of your God as you work heartily for him, that's going to be such a good place, a good ground-swelling place to start. And now we're going to come to our third passage, and it's going to be in Philippians chapter 1. I encourage you to turn over there. We did this with our youth group recently this year. Philippians chapter 1, I would say this is our most challenging one. It's a little bit of a thorny grounds to get through, so you'll have to bear with me as we try to differentiate what it's revealing to me, and maybe you can share with me some thoughts on it. But what I want you to understand is this, is I think a good foundational skill to use our time and our efforts, frankly, our passion to good use, is to find joy and satisfaction in the cause rather than the one who accomplishes it. And let me put it this way. We're going to read from this passage. I'm going to notice a couple observations so you can notice as we go along. We're going to start in verse 15. And as I read, I want you to notice this first fact that we're going to notice from Paul's writing. He's clearly writing about individuals who may be false teachers, people who maybe even been criticizing him, hurting him, kind of like rivals, if you will, in his mission and in his work. And here's an important truth. First off, people do things, even good things, for the wrong or the selfish ambition. I think we all have seen people like that. Let's read verse 15. Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. But verse 17, the other proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. Again, it's a very simple truth. Like, I don't think you have to be paranoid to suspect this in others. When we talked about how, like, jealousy and having jealous, like, inclinations causes us to be, like, emotionally stilted because, like, we start viewing the worst in others. And guess what? Sometimes we just have eyes to see. We see people who do corruptible things, sometimes even good things, in very sinister ways. And it's like, it's very frustrating to witness that. People do things, even good things, for the wrong reason. And sometimes it's not just this, like, harmless, hey, they wanted a pat on the back. Who amongst us hasn't wanted praise or accolades? Sometimes it's a little sinister. We don't know all the circumstances, but it feels like they have set themselves up as opponents, rivals, enemies of Paul. And they're out here doing good things for very sinister reasons. But the second thing is this. This is what's interesting. This is where our story gets a little dicey. Secondly, good can still get done even from those who hurt or intend to bolster their own pride. Notice with me in verse 18. What then, Paul asks, only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. That's interesting, isn't it? Like, good still gets done, even by people who are selfish, self-motivated, not very nice. Good can still get done in all this. You see it every day in news and politics, maybe even in your own circle of family and friends. People doing something genuinely good for the sake of personal benefit or at the expense of you. It's not right, it's not kind, and if you have been, you know, cut out of the praise for that, I'm sorry. The laborer is worthy of his wages. However, good can still get done, man. That's interesting how that works. How do we reconcile this dilemma that good gets done even by people who are unworthy of the praise they get? This is our last thought, the third observation. It is possible to be joyous for the good that is done no matter the method by which it was acclaimed. Again, he says, and in that I rejoice. Yes, I will rejoice. He praises this moment. I think that that's interesting. Again, it's kind of a little thorny, a little interesting. You and I both know this is a dangerous road. We can start endorsing or overlooking evil in our midst under the guise of, quote unquote, for the greater good. I'm not talking about overlooking evil, injustice in our midst. It's simply that in your relationships and in your everyday work, you might see someone succeed in ways that you deem selfish and wrong and inappropriate, but it is possible to still find joy in what God can do for those moments, even if you personally are not praised for it. That's hard to grapple with, isn't it? But yet Paul demonstrates such a selfless example in this. Paul demonstrates this perspective to have. When the main cost is my personal pride, my personal gain, or my personal acknowledgement in this moment, I will not take the fight to tasks. He thanks the Lord to be, or he trusts in the Lord to be just and do right in his time and in his own way. When the payoff is the glory of God, the mission of God, and the message of Christ preached or presented, he not only lets go, he chooses to be thankful, he chooses to be satisfied, he chooses joy. That's an interesting perspective, and I'm not sure what to do with all this information. Except to say, in our big grappling with pride and our challenge to overcome jealousy and comparing ourselves to other, and again, just like using and fine-tuning the passion that God has given in me to be effective for his world, it's important for me to find joy and satisfaction in the cause rather than who gets the credit. That's tough. It's a challenge. And it's, again, it's a very thankless job to be a citizen sometime. And how do you grapple with it? Especially some. We started off with a quote from Harry S. Truman, and I want to put it in a different lens real quick. It is wonderful how much good a man may do in this world if he does not care who gets credit for it. It's interesting. Is that just a rewording? No. interesting that you brought that up, because this is from, and I'm going to make sure I read this right, this is attributed to an anonymous English Jesuit priest who was quoted in a 1909 book about Abnaki rugs and how they were made. Long way of saying this, the quote attributed to Harry S. Truman, our president, as being like, hey, put a, you know, government first, put our nation first, doesn't matter if you get the credit, it was plagiarized by some nobody that we'll never know of who was quoted in a 1909 book about rugs. Sometimes you don't get the credit even if it's your idea, even if it's your philosophy, even if it's your hard work. Sometimes some, I don't know, corporate mongol comes in and gets all the recognition. And it's easy to be cynical about this worldview. It's easy to fight in two ways, right? It's easy to be to realize that I'm not getting the recognition I deserve, and therefore to fight back and to like be jealous and prideful and boastful and sounding my trumpet so that others notice me. Or it's very easy to be like, well, I guess I'll just be part of the many and be dispassionate and lose energy and lose fire and say that's someone else's responsibility. It's easy to do either one. What's cool is this. Mr. Gnome Name, Jesuit priest, quoted in 1909. His philosophy still stands. It's still heralded. That's a win somewhere. For you, it may not be the win you still want to lean into the most. You may still want your own recognition, your own pride acknowledged, your own efforts praised. That's fair. That's human, man. I get it. It's a challenge to overcome this very primal desire to be noticed for what you do, to get recognition when others get it, to be praised for being you. And here's a few things I want to leave you with today. You are worthy of being praised for your efforts, for your hard work. And if you trust in your Father who created you, who entrusted those responsibilities, those characteristics, and those strengths to you, you are being praised. You are being noticed. You are part of something bigger than yourself. And that's up to you to decide if that is enough time for the days you have here on earth. Because pride and jealousy is such a fiery, easy to fall to prey or thief. You let them in pretty easily. But if what you choose to do is to see the goodness of your God, the place he's put you, the way he's formed you, and his path for you, and that is enough, think of what you could do if you knew you would never fail. Maybe it just starts with understanding that your good God is faithful to you, merciful to you, and will see his will done through you in your days. If you trust and hope, find satisfaction in his will and his glory and who he is. Maybe you've never made that decision for yourself. Maybe you are part of that really hard upstream chase of getting work, getting glory, getting livelihood. And you need something more in this life, and you understand that this will never satisfy you. Right now, our elders meet over in the library, and they'd love to tell you a little bit more about what it means to follow Christ Jesus. But if that's a decision you have in your heart, you would like to do for yourself, you'd like to do it here in front of our congregation, or again, behind closed doors, whatever is best for you, we pray that you take advantage of that as together we stand, together as we sing.